If you turn, instead of to Matthew, which is traditionally the triumphal entry story, let's go to Luke. Luke chapter 19, starting with verse 28. It says in the Gospel of Luke, as we've been studying through it in our Sunday morning Bible study, that Jesus set his face to Jerusalem. There was a reason for that. Here we have the account in Luke of the triumphal entry. Let me build an analogy for you. In modern days, due to the influence of the Greeks, we have elections. And there usually are several ways that men do elections. In communist countries, the winning candidate is chosen, and then you vote for the winning candidate. There is no real election there. In British and parliamentary procedures, people run for election, and then if you lose confidence in the government, the prime minister must, of course, dissolve his government and run again to see if the people will re-elect him. In America, it is different. We are a republic. I want to put that right up there because Cheryl will say something if I say a democracy. But actually, republic is somewhat like a democracy, except that it isn't the rule of the mob. Democracy is the rule of the mob. Republic is the rule of representation. And today in America, when someone runs for election, we're finding out something that you should observe. All of our candidates for president and Senate and House have to be billionaires in order to run. Because the elites have decided that the best way to control the people is to exclude the poor people from running. And in order to run, you have to have a lot of money for TV, for advertising. And many of our candidates that run, if you'll notice, are multi-millionaire billionaires who are beholden to other billionaires. And it's a little club that when we get our people, there's no true election, honestly, in America anymore. It's all kind of a game that is played. Now, you can get mad at me, but that's what it is. It's a game that is played because I'd like to see some poor people run and see if they could make it. But today, you can't. Look at all your candidates. The 20 Democrats that are running are all wealthy, so are the Republicans. It's all the same. And you get the idea, then you go and you vote for the candidate that has already been decided. That's the way it is. But they let you vote to give you an idea that your one vote somehow makes a difference. But that's what the elites do that are in control. All right, why, Dave, are you bringing up an election? Well, in the days of old when Jesus was on earth, they did elections differently. And the triumphal entry is really Jesus' presentation for election by the nation. In this passage, Jesus is actually deliberately announcing his candidacy for King of Israel and asking the people in Israel to make a decision. Yes or no? And that is what the triumphal entry is about. Jesus could not have presented himself more boldly and more openly as the promised messianic king, the anointed one, than to do what he did on the triumphal entry. This is Jesus with no money asking the people for consideration of what will you do? I am offering myself as the king of the nation, the Scion of David. He had everything going for him in terms of who he was, except for one thing. He grew up in Nazareth, and there was a real prejudice in Judea about anybody that grew up in Nazareth, whether you were Jew or Gentile. Nazareth was too loaded with what? Gentiles. And therefore, any candidate that would run already had something going against him, because Jesus was raised in an area of dirty, stinking what? Gentiles. So Jesus of Nazareth was not kosher, except he fulfilled every messianic prophecy there was. And after this, verse 28 of 19, he said these things, he ascended to Jerusalem. And it came about that when he approached Bethphage and Bethany near the mount, which is called Olivet, he sent two disciples, go into a village opposite you, in which you will find a colt tied on which no one has ever sat. Bring it here, and then if anyone asks you, why are you doing this? Tell them the Lord has need of him. What in the wide world, Jesus, are you doing? That would sound so strange to us. This would be the same thing today as holding a rally at a stadium for a political candidate. Today we get that. That's what they do. They hold rallies, and this is what it is. And Jesus deliberately is doing this because there was a messianic prophecy that the promised Davidic king would come and offer himself to the nation for election as their king by doing something that was very unusual. In chapter 9 of Zechariah, if you'll turn there, starting with verses 9 and 10, is the prophecy written 500 or 400 years before this time of what the prophesied king of Israel would do, to indicate to his people that he was presenting himself and they had a decision to make for their king. Yes, we elect him, or no. And in order to indicate this, Zechariah said, rejoice greatly, daughter of Zion. Shout, daughter of Jerusalem. Behold, your king, the true king of Israel, the true king of the nation, is coming to you. And then notice the qualities. He is just. Now, some of you who have our Bible study on Wednesday night, one characteristic of the Jewish kings, most likely than not, was not just, is it? What we've seen of the kings is corruption. This candidate is just. He does things right. He's endowed with salvation. But what they wanted was, as a nation, and I don't blame them, the Romans were hard to deal with. You got to watch those Italians. And they were chafing under Roman taxation, Roman rule, and the Romans didn't like the Judeans either. It was mutual dislike, except Rome went around pillaging everybody, and in order to keep the pillaging going, you had to take over areas and rob these people of their resources. So they see salvation as merely physical deliverance, but what this is all about is spiritual as well as physical deliverance. Endowed with salvation, and then look at this word it says, humble. Now, kings in those days didn't grab a donkey and ride on one, a colt. I've seen donkeys. When we go home, there's a place right by, we wander through the mountain before we get to our house, and there are donkeys that go up the hill. How many have ever seen a donkey? How do you get a donkey's attention? You hit it with a brick. Anyway, donkeys are not the most coordinated. They're not the most glamorous. And they're a little bit rough. The people, if you're going to run Jesus as candidate for the king and you want an election, I'll tell you what the people wanted. They would want someone that looked like Absalom or David. Flowing hair, muscle, tattoos. Weightlifter, regal, chariot. You know, like, we don't we like to see, you know, when we have a military parade in our country, we all these nations put forth the best military stuff they have, and the leader goes across like, that's all a game. That's what they wanted to see. They wanted to see a great candidate just brimming with, I can break them with my one hand. That's what they wanted. What do they get? I love it, because this is how Jesus knew. He was on a donkey, bucking. He had no sword, cuirass. He had no armor. He had no muscles. And all Jesus had was the clothes upon his back. No tie even. And there he was, swaying back and forth, without one weapon, without an army, poor, offering himself to the nation. And what he was doing by this is promising them, if you elect me as your king, I will deliver you. Now, people are often unwise, because God always said, not by might nor by power, but what? You see, God's trying to teach in the history of those of you who've been on Wednesday night, we went through Gideon. When Gideon had 10,000 men, you know what God told Gideon? You have too many. So then he took them down to 300 and he said, you have too much. Take away all your swords. Here is a pitcher. Light it when I tell you to. 300 men who couldn't possibly have taken on the Syrians march in with flashlights. And what did God do? Caused the Syrians to go into complete confusion and they began to kill each other. You see, God does not choose salvation through the resources of men. And so Jesus presents himself, I'm going to deliver you, here I am, but I'm going to not give you anything humanly speaking that you think can deliver you. Because not by might nor by power, but by the Spirit of God. And so he marches. And he promises in verse 10 that if they accept him in Zechariah 9, I will cut off the chariot from Ephraim and the horse from Jerusalem, and the bow of war will be cut off. And he will speak peace to the nations. And his dominion will be from sea to sea and from river to the ends of the earth. Except that Jesus came, not even one weapon, nothing to protect himself, on a donkey. And he's going like this as he comes in. And people are very foolish. Do you know, in America, when we elect candidates, they're usually the ones that are the taller. They've done. It doesn't matter what these people believe. We elect the taller candidate or the better looking candidate or the one. It's never on the basis of what the person has the ability, because there's a lot of poor people in our country that I think could do a very good job running our country. Forget it. Because we judge on the surface. So we go back to Luke. And they put Jesus on the colt in verse 35, and he was going. They spread their garments in the road. And here's what Jesus is saying. I am the Messianic King. You have a vote. Yes or no. Choose you this day whom you will serve. And as he was now approaching near the descent of the Mount of Olives, the whole multitude of the disciples began to praise God joyfully with a loud voice. They had seen all the miracles, and the disciples knew that Jesus could do this. They had seen him, just by the mere touch of his hand, heal people with congenital diseases that had no hope. They knew he had the power. They knew he could do it. But the nation has a choice. Here is the election. Yes or no? And some of the Pharisees, now here we go, I always get into trouble. Now you all know that when I get there, I'm not looking to find a verse on the Pharisees, right? The Pharisees mean the pious separated ones. Today they're known as the Hasidim. The Hasidim are over in Oxnard at the beach. Those are the Hasidim. And the Pharisees were their ancestors. And when they walk down there and you see them and they go, Chabad Lubavitch, that's all part of the Hasidim, and they have a Rabbi who's a Zadik, a righteous one. And they follow them instead of the Messiah. I study all about this now. And some of the fundamentalists, now, visitors, we believe in the fundamentals of the faith, but there is a culture of fundamentalism that is unloving and unkind and cruel and harsh. And we don't want to be that way as a church. Jesus said, by this shall all men know that you're my disciples. Why? By these church splits you have, or by how you what? It's hard to love one another, aren't there? But that's what we're supposed to do. Even if you're a different political persuasion, we don't care here. We just don't care anything about that. And some of the separated ones, that's what Pharisee means, sees the multitude. So the poor people want Jesus. Teacher, rebuke your disciples. Why? Because the Pharisees knew that Jesus was saying, I'm the Messianic King. Okay, yes or no? And the Pharisees and the priests were in charge of Israel. And there is why every election is a scam, no matter what country you're in, because the elections is never determined by the people. It's always by the wealthy elite. Never changes, does it? Rebuke them! We don't want him! He's not a part of the good old boy network, and he's not with us. Boy, if that doesn't sound like today. And Jesus said, if you tell them to be silent, the rocks will cry out. Because you know what Jesus is saying by that? It would have literally happened, but the rocks are smarter than you. That's what he was telling them. As smart as the elites think, the Pharisees that knew all of the oral law and everything else, the rocks would cry out because you're dumber than a rock. But the people won't get their way. The people didn't hate Jesus. It was the elites, just like our country. Election over. Jesus knows that his candidacy was over by verse 41. The nation rejected him, especially its leadership. And here is Jesus' response to the people not accepting their Messiah. And when he approached, he saw the city, Jerusalem, and he wept. Now, Jesus wasn't weeping that he lost the election. We have candidates that will cry over the lost election. He was weeping over the fact of the consequences that nation faced for their deliberate, high-handed rejection of the Messiah. And he knew what was coming, and it's sorrowful in Jesus' heart. There is the sovereignty of God and the responsibility of men. And in the responsibility of men, the nation that was given much failed. Jesus said, to whom much is given, what? And they failed. And there were consequences. Look what the consequences for this rejection was. Jerusalem, Jerusalem, if you had known in this day, even you, the things which make for peace, but now they are hidden from your eyes. For the day shall come upon you when your enemies will throw up a bank before you
surround you, hem you in on every side, and will level you to the ground and your children within you, and they will not leave one stone upon another, because you did not recognize the time of your visitation." Just like there's an election consequence for all the idiots we elect, the nation of Israel. See, you don't even know which candidate I'm talking about, so I don't make anybody mad that way. The nation of Israel paid the consequence for their rejection of the Messiah. And when you reject the Messiah, Jesus said, no one comes unto the Father what? What is the consequence of that rejection? It begins with a J. Judgment. 30 years from this point, maybe 35, Jerusalem will be filled with rebellion to the point where it'll bust over. They'll take over the city. The Romans will march in. And in 3 years, it'll take the Romans 3.5 years, and they'll kill every last one of them. And you can say all you want, as the people would say, how dare you do this? It is due to the national rejection of their Messiah. Because to whom much is given, what? And they suffered the consequence for their disavowal, rejection of the King. And at that point, the gospel of the kingdom and the King was given to the church. And Jesus told his disciples after this, in light of his rejection as King, go into all the world and what? Preach the gospel. And the opportunity to dwell in the messianic kingdom of Jesus is now given to all nations who acknowledge and know that he is the King. So what is the consequence of rejection of Jesus, whether you're Jew or Gentile? Boy, that won't make me a popular preacher, will it? If you accept him, there's salvation. If you reject him, there's what? Judgment. Good luck with Joel Osteen making that sermon. Joel will make everybody think that they're all okay, but you have a decision to make. Will you accept the Messiah Jesus as your King? If you do, Jesus brought salvation. If you don't, God brings what? Judgment. And that was the election in Israel. Jesus had to borrow a limousine. They had to give him clothes to their own clothes to walk on. He didn't have a dime. I guess today they would have told him, Jesus, sit down with a bunch of guys that know how to spend billions of dollars and we'll guarantee your election. We'll advertise and do everything. And I am so thankful that a poor man who was the true King presented himself for a decision to the nation. And because of their rejection, guess what? We have an opportunity to honor the true King.